weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Pressure is a film that was just released last week. The film follows meteorologist James Stagg, played by Andrew Scott, and General Dwight D. Eisenhower, played by Brendan Fraser.
The storms that I'm talking about are real, and the wrath of nature is real.
James Stagg was the chief meteorological officer and was tasked with forecasting the weather for the Allied invasion. Whether or not there are clear skies and calm seas determines if the Allied forces proceed with the most dangerous seaborne invasion in history, or risk losing the war altogether. Joining us today to tell us all his reactions and impressions of the film is Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Great to be here with you, Eddie, here on the other side of the mic.
So a quick note for our listeners, we're going to be discussing spoilers for the film Pressure throughout the episode, so fair warning, you've been warned. So Steve, just to start off, what are your first impressions of the film? When do you see it, and sort of what's your overall reaction?
Yeah, I guess I got the movie fresh off the screen last night. I was up in Chicago the night before taking a flight out of O'Hare, and so saw it in a historic theater kind of near the airport in Park Ridge, and it was kind of a cool scene. The theater was actually built before D-Day. But overall, I thought the film was excellent. It was one of the better science films that I saw, and it certainly evoked a lot of feelings for me that we'll get to in addition to just the weather. But overall, I thought the film was really portrayed well from both an acting perspective, but then there were so many historical tidbits about meteorology in it that it was just fascinating for me.
Yeah, I mean, seeing all the, you know, clips of like people launching weather balloons and stuff, getting those glimpses into the technology back in the day was really interesting. Were you super familiar with that, Steve, sort of the role meteorology played in D-Day?
Yeah, so there's been a couple of connections for me in this particular film. So actually, my grandfather was in the 29th Division and landed in D-Day.
Oh, wow.
On that day, he managed to escape. Actually, that day, he was a munitions expert, and he was a guy that went on the beach. He didn't even have a rifle, but he climbed up on the shore and up to some of the embankments and was putting explosives on some of the German bunkers. He told me that the weather was very poor, but he said a lot of the weather was poor in England while he was there. Mm-hmm. I think he was trying to get used to it from being from the U.S.
So you mentioned, you know, your grandfather being at D-Day and sort of experiencing the weather there. Based on what he told you from his experience and what you saw in the film, was this sort of an accurate portrayal, you think, of how the weather evolved on that day, how it sort of seemed to be kind of poor initially and then cleared up sort of as they had forecasted?
So one of the really cool things that this movie portrayed was the fact that even back in this time during the mid-1940s, meteorologists were starting to get information from remote places, right? And this was a central part of the film. You saw the actors portraying that they were calling people up and information was getting radioed and teletyped into the forecast office. This was relatively new at that particular time, and it shows how meteorology was rapidly evolving, you know, during this era. You know, trying to forecast the weather, having data from only one place, is very difficult. You know, people often, you know, there's old wives' tales that if the wind's flowing from this direction or the barometer is doing X, Y, or Z, you can make a forecast. But it was really in the early 20th century, obviously, with telegraph and radio, where meteorologists started to be able to get information from remote areas. And during the war, this obviously was expanded greatly because we started to have data collected from ships all over the place, at aircraft flying at high altitudes, really for the first time, collect information on the jet stream. And this information started to get collected and able to be centralized so that sort of the the three-dimensional picture of the atmosphere could start to be put together. And this was really highlighted in the film. You saw where the American forecaster was using these old maps to try to make a what's called an analog forecast to predict the weather, and we can touch on that too. Whereas Dr. Skaggs was starting to put together this three-dimensional picture where he was taking data from the upper air, he mentioned. And this allowed meteorologists really for the first time to try to put together the fact that the atmosphere was very dynamic. Obviously, we knew that weather systems formed and decayed. But with all this new data, you could start to put together the fact that there was actually an ability to start to predict where and when systems were going to develop based on where the jet stream was, which we now know the jet stream really is the forcing for what we call mid-latitude cyclones, or a lot of weather that impacts Northern Europe and the Northern United States. So this was very well done in the movie. It talks about how all this data, you can see the teletypes and the typewriters typing all this information up, people getting calls, and then trying to analyze all this into a picture so that the meteorologists could start to figure out what was going to happen. And that was really cool to watch because this was all really brand new at this time, and it was amazing that they could start to put this together for this successful forecast.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned their, you know, mid-latitude cyclones and this new understanding they were starting to get at the time. How much of what sort of James Stagg was doing in this film still is around today? How much do we still use these same sort of understandings of these mid-latitude cyclones to forecast the weather?
Yeah, so I thought it was really cool discussion in the movie was that, you know, basically there was a debate, obviously, about what was going to be happening. And, you know, they talked about this analog forecasting technique, which really simply is like looking at past cases and saying, well, it happened before, it's going to happen again. Well, as we know now, cyclones in the atmosphere, these mid-latitude cyclones, are basically arising from what we call baroclinic instability. It's where you have a strong temperature gradient, which causes a jet stream to form. That jet stream causes the air to diverge in the upper atmosphere in certain regions of the jet stream. And that can cause either new cyclones to form, or it can cause convergence in the upper atmosphere, which can cause low pressure systems to weaken or high pressure systems to strengthen, right? These are things that we take for granted today, this basic understanding. But in this particular case, there was literally this exact phenomenon happening, and it really required that three-dimensional view to try to understand where the jet stream was. And they repeatedly talked about, oh, there were these cyclones, and they were moving in a certain way. They were forming and going to impact Normandy within their life cycle. And this was really an understanding that came out of research that was being done before the war in Norway, in the so-called Norwegian school, led by Carl Gustav Rossby, who was the meteorologist that came up with a lot of these ideas. And he was really, you know, working with others in that Norwegian school to be able to understand how these cyclones developed with the upper level jet stream, and then the sort of weather that you experienced from those cyclones. And so it really was able to take the idea that, you know, there's analogs, and really making it sort of a dynamic system so that you could start to say, oh, well, if I see this pattern, I know where cyclones may form. I know whether it's likely, based on the shape of the jet stream, whether we're going to see a storm intensifying, where it's going to track. And later on, of course, this became stuff that we simulated with computer models. So it really motivated the use of a three-dimensional dynamical model that could simulate not only what's going on at the surface to be able to forecast the weather, but also what's going on in the upper atmosphere so that we could get those dynamical connections, the physics that drive the life cycle of these impactful mid-latitude cyclones.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking from my own experience, like, we still learn in undergrad nowadays in meteorology these same cyclone models that at that time were brand new, but still sort of underpin all of our understanding of meteorology, especially in these kinds of systems, which is really amazing. So if this forecast were being made today, how would the process look different, do you think?
Yeah, so of course, today, we have a lot of technology that we didn't have in 1944. It wasn't until after World War II that meteorological radars came about. And so today we would have advanced warning of a cyclone, at least within a couple hundred miles of shore, seeing those things coming in. But obviously today we also have satellites. Here we could see weather systems well out over the ocean, well upstream of any forecast region, and really be able to start tracking cyclones, say you were forecasting in Europe, that we're tracking over the Americas and even in the tropics that were affecting mid-latitude weather. So satellites allowed us from an observational perspective, really for the first time, to be able to see globally where these mid-latitude cyclones were tracking, to really be able to look at things like where the jet stream is, where these cyclones may be forcing, where different air masses are.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois. Today we're discussing Pressure, the fast-paced war film that focuses on the D-Day forecast with Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois. So throughout the film, James Stagg is frequently clashing with the lead American meteorologist, Irving Crick, and their main disagreement is on their different forecasting philosophies. So Steve, we've already talked a lot about James Stagg's approach and this empirical forecasting method. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about Crick's approach and this sort of analog-based forecasting.
Yeah, so this is a really cool contrast in the movie, and it even touches on things that we still do today, because in some cases we still do use analog forecasting for longer term forecasts. But let me talk a little bit about sort of the strengths and weaknesses of that sort of method versus the empirical sort of physical method that James Stagg used. So Irving's method basically relied on having a stack of old maps and saying, okay, we've collected these maps over time and history. And it basically says, makes the assumption that what happened before is what's going to happen in the future going from now. Usually, I mean, on the face of it, it doesn't seem like a bad assumption, but there were a couple issues that they raised in the movie that sort of brought up some problems with this approach. The first was, and it was sort of highlighted towards the end of the movie, the fact that, you know, the argument that James Stagg used against analog forecasting was that Irving Crick basically was lazy and he didn't look back through all the cases that he had available. And some of the cases showed that there were actually storms that formed given the same initial condition.
Yes, the weather was as he described in 1904 and 1925, but he fails to mention 1916, June 5th, the battle for Mount Sorrel. Then, as now, there were areas of high pressure above the Azores, but the storms came anyway. Many people here will remember that battle. Chaos. Absolute chaos. Thousands of lives lost. Hell on earth. Torrential rain. He's selecting the data that suits him and ignoring the rest, and we must face the facts. The facts! However frightening they may be.
Right, so that obviously showed that there's, you know, sort of a human element to analog forecasting, and if you don't look through the entire data set that you have, there could be some bias introduced by that. And clearly, I think the movie insinuated that Irving Crick was sort of trying to give the generals the news that they wanted to hear, which obviously is not what you want to do as a scientist, be sort of biased based on your audience. But the other thing that was interesting in the movie is that they talked a little bit how Irving Crick was lucky using analog forecasting solutions, and that was due to the fact that he was forecasting for places like California and the Mediterranean, where if you've ever been to those places, you know that, you know, 9 out of 10 days it's sunny and the weather doesn't really change that much. And that, in that case, analog forecasting is probably going to do great, because if you've already got a 9 out of 10 chance of having fair weather, you're going to get lucky, right? So the highlight here was that, yeah, in the mid-latitudes, where we have these mid-latitude cyclones, you have these very dynamic systems that form and decay on the jet stream. And in that case, there could be some very subtle differences in the pattern that could make or break a cyclone forming in a certain location, intensifying to a certain degree, or tracking in a different location. So this is really where empirical forecasting, which later became things that we do in numerical weather prediction, really outshine the analog type forecasting. Now, we still use analog forecasting today in what we call the seasonal to subseasonal prediction or longer term forecasting, when our empirical models start to break down due to errors in our initial condition and in our models. It actually has been shown that some of these analog models can produce skillful forecasts at some of these longer ranges. But the reason that they work is because you're looking more at larger scale patterns.
So I also want to talk a little bit about this concept of uncertainty that comes up quite a bit in the film. Eisenhower is always asking Stagg, are you 100% sure of the forecast you're making? And Stagg always responds that of course he's not.
We are faced with a succession of two aggressive storms.
Are you absolutely certain?
D-Day will be calm and sunny.
I couldn't disagree with that more.
How do you think the film portrayed this concept of uncertainty, and how well do you think Stagg was able to communicate that uncertainty to Eisenhower?
Yeah, so this is always a challenge for meteorologists, and obviously this is a very clear illustration of the impact of forecasts, right? Remember, in the movie, Eisenhower said, I need a go, no go, right? So this was a what we call a binary decision, yes, no, and that was what he was asking for. Now, as a meteorologist, and you spend enough time around meteorologists, we are never certain of something unless it's something that's very imminent. And even when a storm is tracking into our county and it looks like it's going to produce a tornado, sometimes it won't, right? Right. We might have a perfect forecast in our mind, but we need to be able to communicate that forecast effectively so that that level of certainty is communicated to the people in a way that will get them to take appropriate action based on the information that we have and we're trying to convey to them. And of course, the part of that is we don't want to incite panic or bad decision-making on the other end. And obviously in this case, you saw in the general basis during the movie and what they said, there's a lot of sort of panic that was caused by the forecast. There's a whole side of our science that talks about how forecast information can be better communicated to the public and users. And I think this is going to be a frontier for our field going forward as we have more and more risk associated with the weather and even climate change. We need to be able to communicate this effectively to people so that they can make good decisions.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois. Today we're discussing Pressure, the fast-paced war film that focuses on the D-Day forecast with Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Science at the University of Illinois. So I think another sort of related moment here on the topic of communicating the forecast is in the film, there's this moment when James Stagg comes in to give his forecast following Irving Crick. And he has this little speech about it doesn't matter what he says because they're going to believe the forecast that tells them what they want to hear. Do you think this is something that folks, and including all of us, still do to some extent today when we see the forecast?
Yeah, I have a term that I like to use called wish casting. And that is, you know, for example, if you know, someone like me, I love here in Champaign-Urbana when we get a big winter storm. You know, I grew up in Buffalo. I love big snow. You don't get it too often, unfortunately, compared to Buffalo. But, you know, anytime we see a long-term weather model forecast that starts to spit out 7, 8, 9, 10 inches of snow, you kind of have to say, well, you know, how often does that really happen? And is the model just telling me something that I want to believe, and am I really following my scientific principles of understanding the uncertainty in that model prediction when I am trying to interpret these model outputs, right? So I absolutely, you know, models can spit out a lot of eye candy. A lot of that eye candy, unfortunately, today sort of gets spread out over social media. And so, like, we often joke about long-term snowfall predictions from these models, you know, putting out feet of snow in Champaign-Urbana. And, you know, most of us realize that, A, that we have no analog for that, connecting to the other idea in the show.
Yeah, just to insert my own sort of summertime anecdote here, I think, you know, we enjoy seeing a thunderstorm every now and then in Champaign. And there's this very large suite of models that will show you predictions for storms over the next couple of days. And when you're really hoping to see a thunderstorm, suddenly a model that you know is not the best becomes much more believable when it's showing what you want to believe. So Steve, this film obviously portrays one of the most important forecasts in history. What are some other historical weather events, if you could choose one sort of historical forecast to also be adapted into a film, what would you choose?
So one of the things that's really, or one of the events that was really impactful, obviously a lot of weather events have impacted history very importantly over time, was the Challenger disaster back in the 1980s. I was a kid watching this live in school. But, you know, I remember with that event, there was a very cold air mass sitting over Florida, which led to unseasonably cold temperatures that affected the booster rocket O-ring and ultimately led to its failure in the explosion.
We have a report from the flight dynamics officer that the vehicle has exploded. Flight director confirms that. We are looking at checking with the recovery forces to see what can be done at this point.
A search effort couldn't begin for some 15 minutes after this. Debris, they said, just kept raining from the sky. The head of the space shuttle program had no explanations, just sorrow at the tragedy.
At 11:40 a.m. this morning, space program experienced a national tragedy with the explosion of the space shuttle Challenger approximately a minute and a half after launch from here at the Kennedy Space Center.
So this obviously was an event where the weather forecast was sort of being made in a similar way to D-Day, but there's probably a lot of engineering information that impacted, you know, whether it was okay to launch on that particular day, even though it was very cold. And obviously rocketing is a very sensitive thing that also is impacted very strongly by the weather, and probably a lot of pressure on NASA to get that rocket off while the media was paying attention. It'd be interesting to see how that played out and reconstruct that information so that we can try to learn more about that particular event. But obviously another tragedy, unfortunately, that didn't end up as positive as D-Day.
Yeah, like you mentioned, definitely a lot of parallels here just in terms of the pressure those forecasters must have been under. And unfortunately, that did take a more tragic turn than the D-Day forecast did.
Yeah, right. Even with the recent Artemis launches, it's you know, for me, it's always nerve-wracking watching a space space launch from Florida with humans on, because it certainly harkens back to that event.
Definitely. All right. Thank you for joining us, Steve.
Pleasure to be here.
We've been talking with Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. I'm Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Thanks for joining us on Weather Realness. Do you have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.